going down? This is Donnie Houston Podcast. I am Donnie Houston. Check it out, man. We got a very special guest today representing H-Town, man. I'm talking about he did, if I would say, man, it's the first real country rap tune. You know what I'm saying? Before Lil Nas X was doing country rap, man, this man had a record, man, called Country Rap Tunes, man. It was fire. Classic joint, you know what I'm saying? And done some other things around here, man, we're going to get into. But, hey, today's guest is none other than Toe Down. What's going down,
man? What's going down? And you know what's going down. Man, what's the deal, man? I can't believe I'm sitting here on the couch, man. Fuck, I made it, y'all. Mom, I made it, bitch. Yeah, it's definitely going down. I got Gangsta Granny here. She's downstairs and stuff. She's hanging out with the boys. She's teaching them how to roll down there. She got the backwoods in her hands, so she definitely handled them down there. But, man, how you been doing?
Man, I've been cool, man. Just chilling, man.
Yeah, that's good stuff, man. I see you blowing up, man. You know, I'm on, you know, YouTube a lot, checking out my cryptocurrency and shit. And I see you pop up all the time. I'm like, man, hold up.
Man, that's what's up, man. Hell yeah. So, man, but what's new with you, though, man?
Man, well, you know, definitely things have changed in the music business for us. So we still doing music, but really the focus is real estate, cryptocurrency, more real estate, and then, you know, a dab or two of some music now and then. So it's basically, you know, one of those things where when I came home, I definitely wanted to try to make up for lost time. And so you have this game plan that, hey, listen, when I hit the streets, I'm going to hit the streets ground running, you know, do what I need to do. So I came home, I made a record, Mr. Country Rap Tunes. And at the same time, my brother was getting into real estate. He was, you know, working on a couple fix and flips. And at the time, he was really learning how to do the process of wholesaling houses, which is basically you're a middleman. You go out and find the property. And basically you sell it to somebody that wants to flip it. Mm. And you make, you know, $5,000-$10,000 depending on the size of the property. So he was doing that. I was working on a record. You know, I put the record out to a couple of my friends that are in the industry. Nobody, you know, it didn't hit the streets. And I got a lot of good feedback. Scarface was even hollering at me for a minute. I was like, hey, man, well, listen, we're going to go holler at BMG and, you know, get you all straight and stuff. And at the time, my brother was doing real estate. And what I came to find out is that the music business had switched so much in the 5 years that I was gone that it went from, you know, you putting out a record, you know, like actual, you know, 10 songs to, hey, you got to put out a record for the streaming process. So it's now more of a 360 deal when you walk into these places and they're offering you $125,000 or $150,000. And then they want you to use that money for your promotional budget. And so really you're basically hustling twice. You got to hustle to get that first money and then you got to hustle again to get that money back. And so for me, it was a little bit different. I was like, you know what? Instead of putting out this record right now, let me fall back because I see my brother stack just as much paper in the 3 months that I was fucking around with music than he was doing real estate. So like anything, my brother and I, when we do something, we try to do it really big, no matter if it's growing dope, no matter if it's his music business, no matter if it's real estate, no matter if it's cryptocurrency, we try to do it big. So, you know, he was at it with an appetite that I'd seen none other than myself trying to get in the music business. And when he's focused, he's laser focused. And so he was able to get in a position in the real estate game where he became one of the known persons where if you have a deal and it's dying and you need somebody to buy it, he's the guy that can get it sold for you. Hmm. And so that's a good guy to have. And so there's a lot of people right now that are trying to holler, you know, we made a little bit of money in the real estate and we're like, okay, cool. You know, now what are we going to do with it? And so it's always about, you know, that hustling. Hey, listen, even though I don't hustle, you know, weed, the things that you learn from that game, they multiply in your life so many times over. The things that you are good back then are still transferable today. The way I was able to market and promote a product that I couldn't really market or promote, weed, at that time, imagine what you can do with it when it's legal and you can promote it, like real estate, you know? Yeah. So the game has totally switched for me. We went from, you know, turning deals down for music, you know, small deals, 360 deals that you really wouldn't even want to be in. Like, they're so bad. Like, they're going to charge you to print your shirts. They're going to overcharge you, and then they want that money back first. It's just, man, listen, if you're out there and you're an indie artist and you're trying to get on, it's real simple. content. If you're making music, make the video with it. If you're doing videos, you know, do as many podcasts as you possibly can. That content, I can't say, the content is currency, basically. The more content you put out there, the better off you're going to be. And so for me, I don't have that appetite to do all that right now. I want to fall back and, you know, try to make some moves. And, you know, I want to make some kings. You know, I want to be the kingmaker, you know. So just like my brother was the kingmaker, well, now, it, you know, time to do some things.
Yeah. So, well, man, like I was saying, we were talking about country rap tunes. Well, I was talking about country rap tunes when I was on the intro, but tell me about, like, I mean, even before that, like, what, how early did you even get into rap, or like just growing up in Houston? What, you know, what side of the Asia you grew up on and all that?
So I grew up Southwest Houston, went to Westbury High School.
Yeah.
You know, it is what it is, the future prison of America. You know, I held my first weapon over there. It was awesome. So shout out to Donnie, matter of fact. What up, D? But, you know, so how all that came about was, you know, I had been listening to screw music for a long time. And at that point in time, I was, you know, I was bringing some fire to the streets in another way. And so
even back then, in high school.
So how that really got all involved, straight out of high school, I was in a rap group. I wanted to be in a rap group. And this was before, you know, Eminem and everybody else. And, you know, so it was me and two other guys, and we were called Thugs of Another Kind.
Like, what year is this?
This is 98. This is 98. So 98's there, and we put out a record called Thugs of Another Kind. We put three black dudes on the front cover, so you didn't know it was three white guys. And what we had learned from that experience, even though we didn't recoup all our money, we had sold 5,000 units out of the trunk of the car. We had created a base. We had created something that you could work with. And so when you're selling a $10 CD to 5,000 people, you're
did
now...
Did y'all physically do it? Or y'all
yeah,
like
this is out of the trunk. This is out of the trunk. This is basically hooking up with Lil Kiki, following Lil Kiki around to all his shows, backdooring all his shows. Hey, can we get 5 minutes on stage, Patrick? Patrick, can we get 5 minutes on stage?
Okay, how are you linking up with Lil Kiki at this time? Y'all just... Fans just kind
of,
or just
exactly, you know, we're, you know, first of all, we are, I am selling weed, and at the same time, I'm in this rap group where I'm the lead communicator between everybody. I got the mouth of the group, so I go and run my mouth to everybody.
So what year in high school is this?
This is straight out of high school.
You're out of high school.
I'm
now.
Out of high okay. school, 98, 99, chunk deuce, I'm out of here.
So graduated or dropped out?
At that time, I paid a private school principal to just give me a diploma.
Oh, sure.
It was the most gangster shit I ever did in my life, and it taught me that, hey, listen, life isn't fair, and as long as you know how to run your mouth, you can get whatever you want. Gangster Granny taught me that. She said, baby, you can get whatever you want as long as you ask for it properly.
Okay, wait, so how do you even get into the weed game early? How early do you get into that?
It was at the same time. It was around that 98, 99. See, what happened in the weed game is the guy that was in the group with me, he had known a Hispanic guy that was bringing some shit in. And it was just regular old Mexican weed, you know, 300 a pound. We flipping, you know, QPs and shit like that. Nothing really good. But there was this one guy that was growing weed in Houston, and he was super talented. God rest his soul. He's passed away. His name's Gary. And Gary was so talented at growing weed that I had never seen shit like this before. This weed was fluffy. It was in compressed. It was lime neon green. And he would cut it, and before it could even finish really drying, as soon as you could smoke it, he would sell it to us. And so the weed would be wet, so you couldn't keep it in the bag. But you couldn't let it dry out because you lose the weight. So you're constantly air checking a canister. This is, you know, I'm getting an ounce of dro at this time. And what I'm doing is I'm gramming it out for $50 a gram.
Damn.
So this is before H-Town had even seen hydro. This is 98. This is motherfucker 3 for 10 days. You know what I'm saying? Motherfuckers ain't even fucking with dro. They're fucking with 3 for 10s, shit like that. So this guy Gary, what he would do is he could only grow about a quarter pound at a time. And I would take the whole quarter pound and I would gram it out for $50 a gram. And I knew that if I could get my hands on some more of this shit right here, I could set the city on fire. And so that was my introduction into marijuana. At the same time, I'm in this rap group that I'm hustling to keep that going so that I can keep the lights on and everything else going too. So the weed is paying for the music. The music is putting a little money in our pocket to keep the lights on. So it's just a circle. So we start running our mouth. We hook up with Patrick from Jam Down. He's got Lil Kiki. Lil Kiki is about to blow up, about to release Southside. Releases Southside, it blows up. We follow Kiki around to every city in the state of Texas that you could imagine. They were just handing Kiki money. It was incredible. $2,000 a show, and he had the mindset and the drive to do 10 shows in a weekend. This guy was a straight hustler. He was a beast. Like, Kiki's captain, he's all there. So when you see that, you want to implement things. So we went from just being tag-alongs to, okay, now we're setting up a place outside the show where we can sell our shirts, our posters, our CDs, our whatever we got, you know. So that taught us how to hustle. So we followed Kiki around for a while, and that's what really introduced us into the game as far as music. When it came around to do album number two with the group, one guy got a girl pregnant. The other guy that I'm working with, he's mad at me because I'm hustling and I'm making the money and he's not. So we're bickering and we don't really, you know, talk anymore. And, you know, you're the king, you're the king, you're the tall, you know, so that didn't work out. So we had some creative differences. I was creative and they were just fucking different. And I just fucking, and I was like, fuck it. I go, my brother's like, hey, listen, we got one more shot to do a record. I got $20,000 left on this credit card. We'll go buy the studio equipment. I'm like, Bernard, I don't even know how to turn on a fucking button. I don't even know what studio equipment is. This is back when they were using ADAT machines and shit. So he went and bought the equipment, and we made the record by prescription only, which included the country rap tune on it. And so at that time, we found out that there was a distribution company in the city of Houston called Southwest Wholesale. And Southwest Wholesale was a big fucking deal. Southwest Wholesale was the distribution key point. If you got into Southwest Wholesale and you got to talk to the Robert Gilliman, he could have the power to put your record in front of a lot of people and get you a record deal. So our whole mindset was, okay, we see they're offering Kiki this, they're offering Hawk this, they're offering Big Pokey this. Motherfucker, you gonna do a record with these guys over here. And so my brother had the foresight to say, hey, listen, we'll go get the studio equipment. We'll get one of the hottest producers, Derek Grizz Edwards. He was doing the Fifth Ward Boy shit back then. He was a platinum producer. He was trying to get on. We were trying to get on. Hey, listen, teach me how to use this equipment. I'm going to learn this shit, and, you know, we're going to go from there. So he was able to make tracks for other people. We were able to use his house, but our equipment in there, and really learn how to do the process. And so when I started putting the album together by prescription only, we didn't have the song, the single for the record yet. And my brother said, hey, listen, go make a dance song. Dance songs are really hot. We'll be in the club. We'll be popping bottles, blah, blah, blah. Go make a dance song. My stupid ass goes to the studio with Grizz, and we smoke. We slow down, and my buddy's playing the guitar, and he's playing some bluegrass shit, and he's got a roll of quarters, and he's wow, 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 wow. Like, man, play that stupid shit again. Like, Dirty South, what it's about. Click. Hey, go record this shit real quick. And it was that natural. It was that I'm getting... freaking me out right now. It was that natural and that quick, the hit.
Wait, so you wrote the hook?
Yeah, it was instant. From the guitar riff. That was it. That's all I had. And so Grizz put the drums to it. And at the time, UGK had just dropped a Big Pimpin' with Jay-Z. Just dropped it. Pimp C was my boy. Hollered at Bun a couple times. Mama Monroe, rest in peace.
How did you meet Pimp C?
He was a fan of the country rap tune. That story to be continued in just a second. So we got the song. We got DJ Screw. He's over every song. But in order for Screw to screw it down, Screw didn't work off of CDs. He needed records. And the album's not done. So we can't press up a record. So we're burning money pressing up acetates. Acetates are one-off copies of a record. So we're burning off one-off copies so Screw can slow it down so we can have a double disc Screw record, which at the time nobody was really doing, but they just started doing the double disc because we figured we could get two for one on ourselves. And so we were burning so much money because every time I'd go re-record the song, we'd have to burn a new acetate, which means we'd have to spend $500 more to go. It was just crazy the amount of money we were blowing.
And then you need two of them.
You need two of them. So it's just crazy. So what was happening at the time, how we met Screw is to be continued. I'm in the studio figuring out the hook. I want Pimp C and I want Bun B on it. Okay. And at the time, I'm hustling, you know, quarter pounds or 1400 a QP. And so, but I'm buying them from the guy who can barely, you know, keep me fed. And I'm buying them for, you know, 4,000 a pound. So, you know, I'm not making that much money, but I'm making a little bit of money. So I'm like, I got to get some more weed to be continued. So I had some money to pay Pimp C and Bun B, but what they were charging, the song just hit, and their fee went from 10 to 15 grand all the way up to 50.
God damn.
And I was like, I respect it so much, I'm not going to go ask Pimp C to come down on his price. I will not do that. That is a man's price. That's what you pay it. That's what that man wants. He deserves it. So Bernard's like, well, who else is country? And I was like, oh, country is motherfucker I know is Hawk. And at the time, again, I had known all these fellas from hustling weed. I'd be at the shows.
Just a weed man.
I was the weed man. I was the guy. When we were at the shows and we were following Kiki around, I had the best weed. Whenever we were on shows and we need to get fucked up, go holla at Toe Down. 3-2 and I, man, we hung out so much. We were like best friends.
No shit.
It was crazy shit. So 3-2 is a stupid motherfucker, but Guy Rest His Soul, he's crazy as a motherfucker.
You got some stories? You can tell stories?
I got a couple good stories, yeah. A lot of ecstasy stories, but we'll get into that later.
Yeah.
So I was like, Hawk, he's country the motherfucker too. I was like, Pokey's got the draw. You know, let me go holler at Pokey. I was like, Pokey, listen, do this song for me, man. Here's the song. Here's the hook. He's like, where's your verse at? I was like, I don't have it yet. He's like, what the fuck am I supposed to say? I was like, just say some country shit, man. Come on. And you know, if you ever get that record from Pokey, you got to plan a little bit ahead. So if you think you're going to get it in a week, plan for 2 weeks, maybe even three. But he's going to give it to you. So I give Hawk the record, and Hawk, oh, Toe Down, man. This is it, man. Toe Down, man. You done did it, man. Toe Down, man. Listen, man. Toe Down, man. Toe Down, man. He ain't playing with these boys. He's an innovator, man. He done did it, man. He great, man. And that was Hawk, right? Love him to death. And so once he had did his part on the song, I was like, all right, I got my verse now. I got it. No problem. I can pin this in 5 minutes. So I pin my part. I get it down. I go to Pokey. Like, hey, Pokey, you ready? Yeah, I'm hold up, man. I'm coming, man. And at the time, he was staying at the towers over there off Fondren. And I hate to give out your address, Pokey. Fondren and 59. You know, he was big pimping back then. And so I'd go over to his place. He'd be playing PlayStation. Pokey, come on, man. Write the verse, man. Come on, man. You know, all right, hold on. I got you, man. Hold on, man. I'm playing this game, man. Hold on, man. I got you, man. And I'd sit there for fucking hours with Pokey, fucking with him, playing video games, not getting shit done, just getting high as fuck, just chilling with Poyo. And so we eventually got the record to a point where we were in the final mix down. And well, we didn't want to mix it in the garage that we were in at Grizz's apartment. We needed to mix it in a big studio to get the big sound. That's what we thought, at least. So we went to Digital Services, which is no longer in business. Mm-hmm. We wasted tons of money in there mixing down and changing everything in the mix and remixing the remix and trying to get it right. And DJ, I don't even know what DJ it fucking was. It was a DJ from the box. And he walks by and he says, what the fuck is that? I said, it's the country rap tune with Hawk and Big Pokey. He said, who's the artist, Toe Down? I was like, I'm Toe Down. He was like, man, get the fuck out of here. You ain't rapping. Just off the cuff, right? So he heard the record, and he was like, hey, man, I'm going to put that in the I'm going to bring it up in the mix meeting. I'm like, I don't even know what a mix meeting is, but thank you. Come on, man. Let's fucking do it, man. Let's do it. So what happened is he took it into the mix meeting, and Walter D heard the record. And the rest is really history after that with the DJs at the box. And so the record caught fire. DJ Screw was on the whole Screw record on everything. He solidified it. He gave the thumbs up. Like, first white boy in the Screwed Up Click. Let's rock and roll. Dre and Eminem of the South. Let's hit it. I get a phone call. Ooh. it's a call you never want to hear. It was a call that you never really want to hear. And so I got the phone. I got the phone call, and they told me his crew had passed. And at that point, I was like, oh, shit, this is exactly what I need right now, right? The guy I'm supposed to be on the road with, the guy that's going to be DJing, you know, my partner's gone. You know, what are we going to do now? And what really happened was that really set the song just to a whole new level. And so the song caught fire in Houston. And then next thing you know, we got Dallas. And when you get Dallas in Houston, you got a top five market, you got top, you know, top three market or top four. Some, you got two top 10 markets. When you are able to get radio play in two top 10 markets, you can basically write your check for whatever you want. I mean, there were so many record companies that were like, hey man, listen, you'll have a gold record in 6 months. We can give you $250,000 now. You know, you can do whatever you want. You know, this was Atlantic. I mean, Def Jam, they fucking flew us fucking to New York, went to the MTV Music Awards. I mean, these people are fucking anything that we want. My brother's running them through the mud. And at the time, we had heard of so many bad deals, you know. We had known what we wanted, but we also know what we didn't want in a record deal. And so back then, people were getting shelved. You would get on a record label, and they would prevent you from coming out so they could push their other artist. So they just basically get you out the way or shelve you or put you up. So we wanted to get into a situation where we didn't get shelved. So my brother came up with this thing that, hey, listen, every 9 months, we're going to need another advance, and it's going to be 20% of what the other advance was. So song catches fire. My brother's able to negotiate with Sylvia Rome for $1 million record deal. We got $500,000 for the video budget and a $500,000 advance. And at the time, I had a 23% royalty rate, which was at the same rate as Michael Jackson. White boy from Houston, selling dope, not really a fucking rapper at all. Just know how to run my mouth, that my mother gave me that skill. And I'm in a situation where I got this lady who's finna cut me a check for making a record with my friends. I'm like, this is a fucking life right here. Listen, where's the Lexus dealership and where is the diamond store at? I need to go get straight. We got to go party. And so we're able to get the check. And the first thing I want to do was hit the jewelry store and go buy a car. And my brother said, I'm going to write you a check. And he said, I'm going to write you a check. You go do whatever you want with it. He wrote me the check. And he said, listen, Brian. Not too many times you're going to get money like this in your life. You got to decide what you want to do. And so are you going to invest in yourself? Are you going to go get something that depreciates, a depreciating asset? You know, what are you going to do with that car in 5 years? What's that car going to be worth? And so my brother always put me up on game when it came to, like, money and everything else. When it, you know, came down to the money, he wanted to make sure that I was going to be taken care of. And so we was always 50-50 on no matter what we did. Batman or Robin till we die. This is my ride or die. This is my number one. Don't Ace Boom Coon. This is it. So, you know, he wrote me the check. And he was like, you can do whatever you want with it. And he was like, hey, listen, I have an idea. Why don't we go buy a house? We'll do the MTV Crib thing. We'll trick it all out. We'll put a studio in that motherfucker. We'll fuck bitches, have parties, make records. You can do whatever you want there. Well, Bernard, I really don't have, you know, the knowledge to do all that, but fuck it. Let's, you know, rock and roll. And so we bought all the equipment. The equipment sat in the house. We had purchased the house. We tricked it out. And at the time, I went to Guitar Center, bought $50,000 worth of equipment, Pro Tools, everything. And so the stuff sat in the house for about a month, and I just got fed up one day, and I was like, you know what? I'm going to hook it up. Fuck it. I'm not going to wait on the guy to come. I've been waiting on Skip Holman, who was the architect of sound when it came to the UGK records. He was the sound engineer that mixed all those records. So Skip Holman, shout out to Skip Holman. He was the guy that was supposed to be teaching me how to use the equipment. And so waited to get a session with Skip for almost 2 years. finally get the session, you know, that works out well. But in the meantime, I start hooking up the studio equipment. Every in has an out. I'm make some music. So at this point in time, I start making music, you know, figuring out what tracks are, figuring out what tempos are, figuring out what, you know, music is. But at the same time, I'm learning how to grow weed. So the growing weed thing, I'm killing everything that I'm growing. Everything that I grow turns brown and dies. For whatever fucking reason, I did not have a green thumb. I was wasting money. I saw any advertisement that said you could grow weed, I bought it, and it didn't work. Like, there was this wheel that you could buy that rotated over lights. I was supposed to produce like 5 pounds of weed or whatever. They're $5,000 a machine. I bought 5 of the motherfuckers. It didn't work out. Like, damn. Everything I was touching just turned to shit. Finally, I was able to get some game from Gary before he passed away. And that really changed my whole weed game. I actually started making some green weed. And what really happened is I got a guy who gave me a strand from California. And that strand really helped me grow better weed. And so I'm growing better weed. The music business thing is slowing down because we're transferring from making $7 a record to 70 cents a download. So that's the music side's going to shit. Everybody's coming to buy weed from me at the studio. Lil Wayne showing up, Lil Flip showing up, Zero showing up, everybody from the North Side showing up, Mike showing up, Paul showing up, Slim showing up, everybody showing up. It's the spot. Wherever you want to be recording at is over at Toe Downs. He got the weed and he got the studio. You can knock 2-for-1 out. It's a wham bam, thank you. You know, marijuana and music are synonymous. They go hand in hand. So at that point in time, you know, the music business was good. I was doing $125 an hour studio time. Little Flip would come in there and he would waste 12 hours of studio time to record, you know, 4 or 5 songs. Most of the time we were gambling on the damn pool table. You know, it was just, you know, the shit was unreal at the time. And then not only that, but we had the best weed. You know, I would go out to California and I would try to find weed that we were growing and they wouldn't have nothing like it. I'd bring it to them and I'd be like, hey, where can I get this at? And they're like, man, we don't have weed like that. Where'd you get that at? I was like, I grow it in Texas. They're like, you grow that in Texas? I'm like, yeah, why don't you come fuck with me? So the weed thing started out and that thing started catching fire. Or like, it's kind of like the music business all over again, but it's with the weed. So I'm like, okay, hold on. The weed's starting to really make some money. The music business is making good money, $125 an hour studio time, but I don't have no time to record no records. So I'm not really recording any records at this point in time. I'm still doing studio time. I'm mixing people's albums. I mix the Still Tipping on Fofo's record. I mix the Paul Wall record.
You mix Still Tipping on Fofo's?
I mixed all Swish House of shit. Swish House record that came out that went platinum, I mixed it.
No shit.
I mixed the Mike Jones record. You can go back and check the credits. I mixed the Paul Wall record. I mixed all that shit. Every hit that you are listening from, we mixed that shit.
No shit.
All day. You can call T. Ferris. You call Watts. Watts would call me up, ask me for Pro Tools tips. Hey, Tordown, how you do this, man? Hey, Tordown, when you do this, man? Hey, man, what's up with it, man? And so the knowledge that I had in the music business, because nobody taught you anything, you had to learn it from another person that was there that knew more than you. So I'd try to hook up with every great producer and get a track from them, but I'd go sit in the session while they made the track so I could learn, copy what they do. So I was working with the best producers. I was working with the best people in the, you know, the music industry. I got the fire weed. Man, life is really good right now. You really can't fuck with me. I really want to pop bottles and go fuck bitches. So that's exactly what I do. I stop making music. I start partying. I put myself out there like an ass. And that's when really shit went wrong. You know, I went and bought an Escalade. I went and bought some season tickets at the Rockets courtside. So I get arrested. It gets put on TV. I got courtside tickets the next night. I need to get bonded out. Somebody need to come get me. I need to go to the Rockets game. This is my thinking. I got busted for weed. I need to get out of here so I can go to the Rockets game. I don't even worry about the weed case. I'm at the Rockets game. the prosecutor is calling the judge and saying, this guy is on TV at the Rockets game. You need to pull him back into county. That's the mindset at the time. So it went from having the fire, you know, the fireplace to record. We recorded the Mike Jones record, the Paul Wall record. We recorded everything that Little Flip did with Zero, the Two Kings records, all that shit. It was the, when Screw passed away, the South Side really didn't have a spot to record, so everybody started fucking with me over at my spot. And so the people who I really fuck with and have relationships with, I wasn't charging them shit. I charged them homeboy hookup rates. But the money that the studio was making was good. The money that the Wii was making was even better. And I'm like, okay, everything's going well. I get arrested. Someone snitched me out. I'm like, man, I'm going to go to jail 5 years. But.
Oh, wait, wait. So someone snitched. That's how you ended up getting caught up. Somebody snitched.
Very first time, what happened was, back up a little bit. It's going to need some of this. So what happened was, I was dating this girl. And I broke up with this girl. I thought everything was copacetic. I thought everything was cool. Apparently, everything wasn't cool. So right as soon as we break up, I go get a house. It's a little bit bigger. You know, I'm not really trying to say, ah, fuck you, bitch. I'm doing better. But I'm doing better. So I get a little bigger spot, but she knew what I did. She knew that I grew weed. Shit, I was growing weed in our house. I put all the mom plants in my house so I could know what weeds do I was gonna grow next. I wanted to make sure I wanted to test it in my spot first before I brought it out to everybody else. So she knew what I did. Well, when we broke up, 6 months later, she runs off and gets married. This guy apparently likes to get high in the school zones at the elementary schools. He gets pulled over in a school zone. They find a gun. They find a crack pipe. They find all this other shit.
Damn.
This guy, he starts freaking the fuck out. He says, hey, man, listen, I got some information if you'll let me go on this bullshit. Well, he says, listen, I don't have the power to do all that, but the lead guy, the lead detective, he has the power to do that. Why don't you talk to him? So long story short, that guy talks to the lead detective. They work out a sweetheart deal. He gets off if I get convicted. Well, all of a sudden, I'm at the MTV Music Awards. My house gets raided. I'm in LA. My brother calls me and says, hey, man, you might want to stay there for a day or two till I get your attorney straight. Your house has just been raided. This is right before I'm about to go to the MTV Music Awards, like literally an hour before I'm about to go. Like, that fucked up my mind for the whole entire trip. Like, it just ruined my trip. Like, I was like, damn, I got to move all this money. I got to try to, I got to try to make some arrangements. I'm going to be going away for a while. I might be doing 10 years. You know, this is the mindset I'm thinking, because at my house, I had turned the whole upstairs into the grow facility. I had three rooms. Each room had 3,000 watt lights in them. So I had 9,000 watts in my motherfucking house. And so when you're doing, you know, 3 pounds of light, you got 9 lights, everything's groovy, baby. You know? So I'm thinking to myself, fuck, I need to make some arrangements before I go do my 10-year bid, because I know I'm going down forever. This is the mindset you have when you've never been arrested before, right? And you've never been arrested before, you think when you get arrested, you're going to go do life. That's just the way motherfuckers be thinking, man. It's just the truth. So I'm like, all right, I got to do this. I'm going to do my life. Blah, 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 blah. So I get on the plane. I'm heading back to Houston. I just know I'm being greeted with Houston police officer standing right there with a pair of handcuffs when I get off the plane. I get off the plane at like 10:30 at night. There's nobody there. Nobody in the fucking terminal. Nobody anywhere. Man, I book into the fucking Escalade, jump in the Escalade. Man, I'm like, boom, I'm going to head to the house real quick, grab some shit. I'm going to bounce out of there. I'm going to go duck off for a minute. And so they had raided my house, but I couldn't understand how they know my house had the weed in it. So we didn't understand at that point that the snitch had gave them the information. So he traded a sweetheart deal to get off his thing with the cop. Well, what ended up happening is the cop revoked his deal because the cop found out that he was sleeping with his girlfriend. So that fucked everything else on that. So
God damn, this is crazy.
What even went even further than that is my ex-fiance, she had a relationship with the police guy that was the lead detective that arrested me. So my attorney was like, well, do you think she'll wear a wire? I'm like, well, shit, we can try it out. So she ended up getting some information. The cop ended up becoming a racist, got it on tape. So some cases that I wasn't involved in eventually got dropped because of some other issues due to the, you know, information that she was able to give them. So that was my first arrest. And when that arrest hit, what happened was the news got involved. And they put this, here's this white guy rapper in this affluent neighborhood. He's selling dope to all these kids. And that really wasn't what the truth was. The truth was I was growing dope, but I wasn't selling anybody in my neighborhood. Shit, I couldn't even, listen, by the time I grew it and cut it and dried it, it was already sold. Most people were mad at me because they didn't even get any of it. You know, that's how fast it flew off the shelf. So, you know, the whole thing with the country rap tunes, it was able to put me in a position where I was able to get a studio. And that studio was able to put on a lot of other acts, little flips. And I don't say put on in the fact of, like, giving them guys money to do something, but giving them guys a spot to record out of, you know. And so we were able to put out a lot of music. So anything from, like, 2001 to, like, 2011, if it came out of Houston, we either mixed the motherfucker, produced it, recorded it, something. I remember doing the bone part for Chamillionaire's song. So I'm stupid shit. Just, you wouldn't even believe it. Lil Wayne's in there with Lala recording an MTV thing because they're getting married now. And I mean, just, this is my everyday life. I'm waking up, I'm going to check some grow houses, I'm going to hit the studio for a couple hours, record my sessions that night. 11, 12 o'clock at night, I'm going to the club, find something to go poke on. You know, it is what it is. This is my life. You know, brand new outfit every night, you know, brand new Escalade, more money in your pocket than you know what to deal with. Like, one time, we had cut down 50 pounds of weed. My brother, I was like, hey, I'm going to go take a shower. I'll meet you back at the studio. We'll split it. You take care of your people. I'll take care of my people. Come back home, all the weed's gone. Like, where the fuck is the weed at? He's like, there's the money for it. I sold it all. I was like, oh, man, all my people are going to be mad at me, man. Like, no, I'm going to fuck you up, man. I went in the back and grabbed so much cash, put it in my pockets, called my friends, said, hey, we're not coming home until it's all spent. I'm going to show this motherfucker. I'm going to spend it all. I'm going to try to spend all this motherfucking money. So we go out partying that night. And at the time, you know, if one ecstasy tab is good, then 10 is better. That's just the way it works with us. If you think 5 is good, then 10 is even better. Like, fuck, let's crank it up. 100 tabs on a weekend, no problem. You know, hit the clubs, 3-4 bottles, no problem. I mean, man, it's whatever you want to do, man. It's, listen, you want to sleep with her, man, no problem. She doesn't know it yet, but hey, do you like to go shopping? And this was the mindset of a young guy who had a lot of money, who was stupid at the time and arrogant. And I learned from all these things. I was trying to impress people that really weren't going to be around in the long run. And so when I think back on it, I laugh about it, but it really put me in a position now in life where it has set me up where I can do anything that I want, because the things that I learned back then are transferable skills. Not being afraid to go talk to a DJ, not being, you know, afraid to go ask somebody, hey, can I tag along? You know, run your mouth, go ask those questions, you know. Was it the squeaky wheel doesn't get fixed or some stupid shit like that? Speak up. And so that really helped me do the things that I want to do in life. And, you know, I was able to do those things. And the country rap tune was a great success. And I look back on that time and I'm like, man, my everyday life then was some fucking crazy shit. That shit could be a movie or some stupid shit, you know. So, but it is what it is.
Yeah. A couple of things we were talking about earlier.
Sorry to just keep rumbling.
That's perfect. A couple things we were going to come back to was how you met DJ Screw.
Okay.
And then
That's a whole interesting story. So yeah. How I met DJ Screw is Hawk, right? He like, hold on, man, you know, go holler at Screw, man. And at the time, I never met Screw. And so he was over there in Mo City. About 7:30 at
this
night.
This after you already did the record or before?
This is, I hooked up with Hawk. And we were buddy-buddy for a while. And this is right before we did the Country Rap Tune record. This is before I'm even asking DJ Screw if he could screw down the whole record for us. This is before all that. So Hawk says, hey man, you need to meet Screw, man. You know, he likes to party too. You know, bring your party snacks and come on, let's go, you know, let's go over there. I'm like, all right, cool. So Hawk's available one night to go meet him. I'm not available. He has to go back home. He's like, man, just go over there and show up, you know. I'm like, well, fuck it. Bernard, come on, let's ride. So I grab my brother Bernard, and we jump in the car. We go head out to Mo City. We knock on the door to the burglar bars. Who is it? It's Toedown, man. Open up. Who? It's Toedown, man. Open up. Who the fuck is Toedown? Hey, man, I hear me Screw, man. Like, who the fuck are you? I'm like, man, I'm Toedown. Toedown who? Like, this is 10 minutes at the fucking door. So finally, door opens. Greeted with the motherfucking chopper on deck. AK-47. Who are you? Man, I'm Toedown. Oh, what up, Toedown? And that's how we met. And that's me and Screw. That's how we met. That's straight up. He opened the door. He welcomed me in. And it was all love from then. And you know, I got to experience shit in there. And the fucking, when you went over to Screw's house, you knew that you were gonna be standing for at least 8 hours straight. It was just you. There's no place to sit. There's just records everywhere. You're not sitting down at Screw's house. You're not sitting. It's just not happening. So we're over there, you know, a couple times fucking with Screw, and that Hawk put me in place to meet Screw. And that's where I got to see Screw do his thing. And Screw is truly talented. You know, Screw could get fucked up and work, you know, party, go fuck around, and work. He was constant with the work. He was constant with it. And that's one thing that I see now in, like, content. You got to be constant with it. So I met Screw through Hawk. And what really happened is my brother Bernard developed a really deep relationship with Screw. And they became really close, and so close that, you know, if Screw needed help with the family reunion party or whatever, he could lean on Bernard, vice versa. They became really close, and so Bernard knew that, hey, listen, Bernard could put Screw in front of some of these people in front of New York to get Screw a real good, you know, nice-sized check, you know. So Bernard was trying to look out for Screw at the same time. He's trying to get me in the door with one of these record labels, too. So my brother, how he was exposed to the music business is that nobody taught him the music business. He went and learned it in the bookstores. And he would go into the bookstores and read everything about the music business. And he'd make notes. And the bookstores was his library. And so that's how he got in the game. And so when we met Screw, Screw and him had a real good relationship because Bernard knew all the business lingo that Screw didn't and able to get Screw a bigger, better deal. And so when we were talking about deals, you had to talk about DJ Screw because DJ Screw at the time didn't have a deal, you know. So he wanted to make sure that, you know, if possible, Bernard could put DJ Screw into a deal. So we met Screw. Bernard had more of the relationship with Screw. I got to experience a lot of great things in Screw's house, like 3-2. We had a party session there one night. I don't know how it turned out, but I know there's some ecstasy tabs there. I think some fry got smoked. Shit, the wall started melting. I mean, just, you're standing there and you're seeing a guy light the motherfucking, and his shit's flaming up, and you're hitting it, and next thing you know, the motherfucking wall is melting. So those are the type of experiences that I have. I can say more or less about those experiences, but the actual memories are all clouded because I did so much dope back then. I mean, I did acid with Flavor Flav at Mike B's studio and on the North Side.
No shit.
I'm on gel acid with Flavor Flav at Mike B's studio on the North Side, and I'm a South Side dude. So at that time, I mean,
this is when Flavor Flav lived out here, though, right?
Yeah. So what happened is Flavor Flav, he needed a place to stay for a while. So Flavor Flav knew Black Cat. Black Cat was a graphic designer. Black Cat and Bernard were tight because Bernard went and worked for Black Cat for free for a couple of years to try to learn the music business. And so when Flavor Flav came down, Bernard and Flavor Flav started hooking up. And so when Flavor Flav would come down here, he'd come hang out at the house. Him and Gangsta Granny would go ride bikes in the neighborhood.
No shit.
So Gangsta Granny pedaling her beach cruiser, waving to everybody with Flavor Flav, chilling and shit. So those are my music experiences and shit. And meeting Screw was one of those things that when you fuck with Screw, he really had your back. You know, man, Tony, that's whatever you want to do. You want to do all the songs? Cool, I'll do all the songs with you. Man, we're going to turn this motherfucker up. I mean, me and you, man, we're going to take this motherfucker live, man. Come on, let's go. And so our mindset was really to be the Dre and Eminem of the South and just go wreck shop. And so meeting Screw was one of those things where he gave me that seal of approval that was like, all right, this dude's okay. I'd walk on stage and you could hear the whole people gasp at one time because they couldn't believe a white boy was up there on the stage. Like, I would be in Louisiana and I would wait for my part to start and I would walk out and you could hear the whole entire audience go silent. And that's some live shit for you. Like, okay, that's the impact I have. All right, now it's time to wreck this bitch. And then you wreck and people are like, okay, hold up. This guy's all right. And so what Screw did was he gave me that seal. He gave me that stamp. I was like, all right, this dude's 100, man. Go make it happen. And so when the country rap tune started taking off, he was the main plug. It was on everybody's mixtape. It was everywhere. I mean, you were mad that somebody had it on their tape, but at the same time, you were like, man, that's love. Fuck shit. We out here, motherfucker. We doing it. Mm. Not only that, but Lil Wayne's rapping over the motherfucker, you know, instrumental right now. You know, so it was, without Screw, the country rap tune would have never been. Without Hawk, they would have never met Screw. So the relationship that I had with Hawk was just more of a brother, like, man, whatever you need, I got you. And even to this day, I still fuck with Misha and the kid. So, Hawk, I got you, buddy. It's all good. I got you. So, without Hawk and without Screw, the country rap tune would have just been some white dude doing a country record. And the country record really developed because Pimp C, growing up, was my Run DMC. Bun B and Pimp C were my Run DMC. You know, so that's how I kind of put things in perspective. So Pimp C was the one who taught me about the Beatles. He taught me how to produce a song. He taught me how to break down a song. He taught me, hey, Toe Down, quit giving away all them bars, man. You're giving away too many bars, 16 bars. You're just giving them away, man. It needs to be 8-bar, 12-bar hook, 8-bar hook, 12-bar hook, man. Hook, 8-bar, man. He was hook happy. But he was right, because motherfuckers, the only thing they want to hear is the beat and the hook. Everything else, you don't know anything else about that motherfucking song, but you know the beat and the hook. And so without DJ Screw's stamp of approval, I would have never became Toe Down, the producer. I would have never been able to meet Pimp C, who was my idol, who called me up, had me meet him at his house to have a 4-hour conversation about music on an intellectual level that was so deep that you couldn't imagine Pimp C talking about the Beatles. You know, you just don't imagine. That was that kind of talk that Pimp and I had, because he was musically creative. He liked to produce too. And so when you hear a lot of my tracks and you hear a lot of his tracks, you can hear that Pimp sound, that live soulful guitar, that organ that brings that deep richness in the song, you know. So producing was one of those things that I had a love for that a lot of people didn't even know that I was doing, but I was doing all the music. Shit, when T. Ferris brought us all the tracks to mix down and stuff, T. Ferris and I produced that record, that Mike Jones record. We produced all that shit. So there are people who make tracks. Shouts out to those people who make tracks. And then there are people that produce the record and bring it to a polished level. And I'm not saying that a beat maker doesn't get as much credit as a producer. I'm just saying they're at least equals, first and foremost. But you need a producer who can bring a polished sound to that record. Nowadays, you don't need none of that shit. You need a microphone, something to record on, and that's it. Nobody gives a fuck about no goddamn levels. Nobody gives a fuck about nothing. Is the beat loud enough? Are my vocals loud enough? Fuck it, let's go. And that's the way music is nowadays. So music has totally switched for me. But not to keep rambling on. No, I can go on for days about this shit.
No, it's cool, it's cool. Yeah, man. So, okay. Well, man, damn.
Hogging up the time, huh?
Nah, hell nah. It's all good. It's all good. What, you got? Nah, I'm cool. You got anything, before we get up out of here?
Man, really, I just want to say, hey, listen, if you got any questions, you want to know something, man, you can hit me up. Y'all know what it is. I'm on social media everywhere. fuck it, I give out the old school Mike Jones style, 713-551-3746. If you need a house, holla at your boy. You need some real estate, holla at your boy. You know, I want to give a shout out definitely to my brother Bernard, Gangster Granny. Y'all, you know, definitely know what it is. You know, I made it. I'm on the couch. Fuck it. We here, baby. We live.
Already, man. You want to give your social media out there?
Where hey, listen, it's toe.down on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook, you know, TOWDOWN, toedown.com. Shit. You can holler at Gangster Granny real loud. Be like, hey, bitch, what's up? Man, listen, holler at me. Just don't call me late for dinner.
Already, that's what it is, man. It's a Donnie Houston podcast. Man, I appreciate you coming through, man, for real.
Hey, listen, anytime you want me to hog up the mic, man, just holler at your boy.
We got to do another
I can get
part.
You some more motherfucking stories, too. Well, you know, what we need to do is bring my brother Bernard in here, and he can see, I did drugs the entire time from, I believe it was 98 to present day. So the stories that I have are parts. He can fill in all them blanks for you. He probably make you laugh, pee your pants, but that's another story. That's part two coming.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. We're going to do part two for sure. Well, man, it's Toe Down, man. I appreciate you coming through.
I got you, baby.
Already, it's the Donnie Houston Podcast, man. We out of here.
Donnie Houston.